Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is November 6, 2019, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is 10th Avenue Freeze Out, Therapeutic Hypothermia After Non-Shockable Cardiac Arrest. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Laura Melville. She is an emergency physician in Brooklyn, New York, is part of the New York ASAP Research Committee and the All New York City EM, and is the NYP. What's NYP mean?
New York Presbyterian.
Presbyterian. Oh, good things are happening here. I saw it on the sign. Amazing, amazing things are happening. I took a picture. I was like, ooh, Presbyterian. Brooklyn Methodist Resident Research Director. Welcome to the SGM, Laura.
Thanks, Ken. I'm super excited to do this. As we said back in the radio days, I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Can you see how excited she is? All right. So this is your first guest appearance. And by saying first, I'm hopeful there will be a second. But we've known each other for a few years. And we even made a Bat Doc video together, which I'll share later. Where did we meet?
Well, I thought the first time we met was when Derek Cass introduced us back at the 2017 ASAP Scientific Assembly in Washington. But actually, I was at the teaching course where you did the Mesmer demonstration, which was really fun, and we all dressed up in costumes and learned about how Mesmer had fooled a bunch of people back then.
So for that presentation, I brought my tickle trunk full of costumes, and I bought residents up or participants up. And each person that I brought up, one got to dress up as Mesmer, somebody got dressed up as Marie Antoinette, somebody was the King of France and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was a great way of understanding why blinded studies have become part of the vernacular now. We also met at Indianapolis at the SAEM, and that's where I asked you if you would do this talk for us.
And what was my answer?
Yes.
Yes. And then she goes, oh, Penny asked you to speak at the New York ASAP meeting. Did he agree to both or one or the other? Is there confusion going on? Right, Penny? Yeah. All right. Well, you may be able to tell by the audio quality that we are recording this live episode. So tell the SGEMers where we are.
We are at the annual New York ASAP Resident Research Day, where we invite residents from around the city to come to a free conference. Yay, free conferences. Today we're in Queens, New York. Can we get a And we feature researchers from the New York area in order to get our residents excited about research. We hope to inspire a few to go into a career in research, many to get excited about their scholarly project, and all of them to understand how important it is to be able to critically read the medical literature. They need to have the right tools for knowledge translation.
They do. And so we start the podcast with a case. And so Laura's going to give a case that we can frame the conversation when we're reviewing the paper. And then we'll circle back to the case and say, can you resolve the case? So what's the case you're going to present?
Okay. So the case is a 59-year-old woman who was brought into your emergency department by EMS in cardiac arrest. She had a witnessed arrest and CPR was initiated by bystanders. Her initial rhythm in the field was reported as pulseless electrical activity, or PEA.
Ooh, did they put a mechanical CPR device on?
No mechanical CPR device, no. But they did bring her in by EMS. The patient achieved return of spontaneous circulation, or ROSC, on arrival to the ED. You call your hypothermia team to initiate targeted temperature management, TTM, which in your hospital means 33 degrees Celsius for 24 hours, followed by slow rewarming for 24 hours. Your senior resident asks you.
And don't you love senior residents when they come up with these questions?
I do.
Yeah.
What keeps us
honest? What did the senior resident say, Laura?
Senior resident said, should we really be cooling our patient to 33 degrees Celsius? Doesn't the data suggest that 36 degrees Celsius is just as good? And if she was not in a shockable rhythm at arrest, will she be likely to benefit from this treatment? The patient's family has separately mentioned that they heard she might have a better chance of being normal if she gets cooled down. What do you say? Do you continue with the ICE code? What do you tell your patient's family?
So for the attendings here, what do you say when a resident asks you a question? Do you say, that's a really good question, now I want you to go do a literature review on it and get back to me? Is that what you say? Is that your defensive mechanism? What do you normally say when a resident asks you a question like that on shift? He's like, hey, wait a minute, I thought this was the Socratic method. Aren't I supposed to be asking you the questions? So I'd love to hear from some attendings. What do you say? Penny, what do you say?
Let's look it up.
Let's look it up. Okay, and where do you look it up?
I do PubMed, they do UpToDate.
UpToDate, okay, PubMed, UpToDate. I'm gonna suggest one other resource. It's called tripdatabase.com, Turning Research into Practice. It's an excellent search engine for finding the secondary literature, so above randomized control trials, and you can divide it out by countries. So tripdatabase.com. Well, Laura, we've covered therapeutic hypothermia a number of times on the SGEM. And this has been for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, the OCAs, right? And therapeutic hypothermia has not been demonstrated to have a benefit or show superiority in the pre-hospital setting.
But two earlier randomized controlled trials showed benefit for good neurologic outcome when therapeutic temperature management was initiated in the hospital after ROSC was achieved. In those studies, the temperature goal was 33 degrees. Those are the beginning studies, the early studies.
Yeah, they were in 2002. I think they were both published in the New England Journal, not my favorite journal. Preliminary studies showing too good to be true effect size, right? And if something's too good to be true, guess what it is? So the SGEM has covered the TTM trial, published in the New England Journal of Medicine. It showed that cooling patients down to 33 degrees Celsius was not superior to 36 degrees Celsius for the primary outcome. That doesn't mean we claim it doesn't work, right? That would be shifting the burden of proof. What we claim is that 33 is not superior to 36. That's it, right? That's the conclusion you can make. Now, we have done a more recent trial, and that was looking at status epilepticus and cooling those people down for neuroprotective effects. And if you think that therapeutic hypothermia was going to have a positive benefit, and you're cooling someone down and you're trying to slow that metabolism down and you're trying to slow down that secondary injury, don't you think it would be seen in status epilepticus? And the result was no superiority. And for each of these podcasts, I like to have theme music. And you know, for this one, it was 10th Avenue Freeze Out. What was the other song we were considering?
You're as cold as ice.
You're as cold as ice. Now, again, it goes with my 80s movies stuff, but this, I can't sing at all. Just because I can't sing doesn't mean I won't sing. But those were from the 70s, right? The theme music for that status epilepticus hypothermia paper was therapeutic hypothermia. What is it good for? Say it again. Yeah. All right.
It seems targeted temperature management is a good example of an intervention that makes sense, but does not always work. There are many examples like this in the literature where something makes sense from a pathophysiologic standpoint, but is not demonstrated to work when properly tested.
Yeah, and think about that. If you know any of the medical history, you know that you could throw steroids at anything and it should have worked, right? From a pathophysiologic standpoint, steroids should work. And yet when they actually do the trial, it doesn't demonstrate this steroids are superior. So what's the clinical question we're going to try to address today?
Okay, the clinical question is, does therapeutic hypothermia improve survival with good neurologic outcome in patients who achieve ROSC after non-shockable cardiac arrest?
Now, do you need some Canadian courage for pronouncing the lead author's name?
I'll try a little sip of coffee.
Coffee, okay.
Lascaru et al. Targeted temperature management for cardiac arrest with non-shockable rhythm in the New England Journal of Medicine, October 2nd, 2019.
Look at this. We are cutting the KT window down, the knowledge translation window down, from over 10 years to 1 month using the power of social media. So we run through a PICO. What was the PICO in this? What was the population?
Okay. The population was adults 18 years and older with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest or in-hospital cardiac arrest of any cause with non-shockable rhythm and a Glasgow Coma Scale score of 8 or lower.
And there were a number of exclusions, and I'll throw those into the show notes. What was the intervention?
The intervention was targeted temperature management to 33 degrees Celsius, which was started post-arrest and then maintained for 24 hours. The cooling protocol was determined by each of the 25 participating sites and was followed by slow rewarming of 0.25 to 0.5 degrees Celsius per hour to a target of 36 to 37.5 degrees Celsius, which was maintained for 24 hours.
Yeah, and each center could use their own cooling protocol. In other words, whether they were externally cooling, whether they had some special device to do the cooling for them, but they left it up to the individual institution for doing that. What did they compare it to?
Targeted normotherapy to 36.5 degrees to 37.5 degrees Celsius.
And the final part of the PICO is, what was the outcome? What was the primary outcome for their study?
The primary outcome was survival to good neurologic outcome at 90 days as defined by, here we go, the Cerebral Performance Category Scale Score.
Don't you love saying that?
I don't.
It's the CPC.
Yes, CPC scale score of 1 or 2.
So a good neurologic outcome. All right, there was a number of secondary outcomes. They don't report them all in the paper. I went to my second favorite website called clinicaltrials.gov. If you ever want to look into a paper, go to clinicaltrials.gov, because if they're published in one of these major impact journals, they have to pre-register the trial. There was more, I think, that more than 20 outcomes listed, or 20 outcomes listed. Not all of them were reported as secondary outcomes. Well, the author's conclusions were, among patients with coma who had been resuscitated from cardiac arrest with a non-shockable rhythm, moderate therapeutic hypothermia at 33 degrees C for 24 hours led to a higher percentage of patients who survived with a favorable neurologic outcome at 90 days than was observed with targeted normotherapy. End of quote. All right, so the next thing we do is we got to probe the literature for its validity, so we go through a quality checklist. All right, so there's 11 questions. That's my second favorite number. My favorite number is 5, because I can count to it on one hand. My second favorite is 11 from This Is Spinal Tap, right? This one goes to 11. Anyways, the first question, are these emergency department patients?
No. All patients were enrolled in ICUs in France.
And were they adequately randomized?
Yes, they used a web-based system generated by the statistician with permuted blocks of varying sizes and with stratification.
And did they conceal the randomization?
Yes.
Okay, and were patients analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized? So this is about an intention to treat analysis.
Yes, although they don't explicitly state doing an intention to treat analysis. In the method section, it appears that's what they performed.
Okay, another quality checklist question is about selection bias. Did they recruit everybody consecutively? So to take all comers, or did they go, yeah, you're in, no, not so much?
Yes, again, they do not explicitly state consecutive recruitment, but figure one suggests that there was no selection bias.
And you want to make sure both groups are similar with regards to prognostic factors at the beginning of the study, so were both groups equal with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes.
All right, and all participants, were they blinded to group allocation?
No. Only the single psychologist doing the 90-day outcome assessment was blinded to the treatment group.
So the patients were probably unaware at the time, right? Because they were like GCS less than 9, right? So they may not have been too aware in the ICU. But the treating clinicians would have been aware, and that blinding for the patient could have been unmasked during the study when the patient recovered, and you could say, oh, you were in the cooling group or you weren't. But the person that did the outcome assessment was blinded, that single psychologist. Were they all treated equally except for the intervention of cooling?
Yes.
Was the follow-up complete at least 80%?
Yes.
Were all patient important outcomes considered?
Yes.
The final question is, was the treatment effect large enough? So was it a big effect size and precise enough? Did it have narrow confidence intervals? Was the precision good enough to be clinically relevant?
No.
Okay. All right. So they screened 2,700 patients for eligibility. They got 584 patients who underwent randomization. The mean age was 67. Two-thirds were male and three-quarters were out of hospital cardiac arrest, whereas the one-quarter were in hospital cardiac arrest. What was the big key result?
Survival with good neurologic function was higher in the TTM group.
So if you just read the abstract, right, this is the message you'd get, that there was more survival with good neurologic outcome in the intervention group. But as my friend in Star Wars says, abstracts are for the weak-minded. All right. So how about the primary outcome? Let's dig into that a bit more. So survival to discharge with good neurologic outcome was the primary outcome. Now, it was 10% in the TTM group and 6% in the usual care group. So it gave a difference of about 4-4.5%. The p-value was 0.047. Now, we don't want to get into dichotomous yes-no based on p-values. And the number needed to treat was 22 to have a good neurologic outcome.
The hazard ratio was 4.5. The 95% confidence intervals were 0.1 to 8.9. And if there was a fragility index of 1.
And we're going to go through what that means in the nerdy section. The secondary outcomes.
There was no statistical differences in any of the secondary outcomes.
Yeah, and one that I wanted to pick out was the mortality at 90 days. It was 81% versus 83%, and this was not statistically different. All right, this is the part I like to talk about the most. This is time to talk a little nerdy. Oh yes, I love talking nerdy. Do you want to talk nerdy to me?
I'm ready to talk nerdy.
Sure?
Yep.
Okay, you look nervous still. Okay, I love the nerdy section because this is where you interpret the studies to some degree, right? To look at some of the threats to the validity and expand on it. And the first thing was the statistics. They based their sample size calculation on the assumption that survival with good neuro outcome would be 23% in the TTM group and 14% in the other group. And this would mean a 9% absolute difference. But what did they find? 10% good outcome in the TTM group, not 23%. And the absolute difference was 4.5. And my EBM mentor taught me that the answer is it all depends. But what he also taught me is if you want to go looking for an outcome and you want to make it rare, just study it. Because no matter what you set out and you go, oh yeah, we see this all the time. As soon as you start studying it, it seems to disappear and go down. And so, you know, they thought they would have a higher prevalence of the primary outcome, and yet in this population, it was less than half. So it was underpowered.
Yeah, besides basing their sample size on this expected outcome, they also fell a few patients short of their target.
Just a little.
The goal was to get 584 participants, and they did, but then three withdrew consent, so that left them with 581. Again, because their outcome of interest occurred less often than anticipated, and the difference between the two groups was half of what was expected, the study was underpowered.
And so if they had a larger sample size, that effect size may have been statistically really robust. We don't know because the outcome was much less than anticipated when they did their power calculation. The second thing we wanted to talk about was p-values and a fragility index. And we have discussed the problems of p-values before and using this dichotomous outcome on the SGEM. They did report a statistical difference between the two groups for the primary outcome. It was a p-value of 0.047. That does not mean therapeutic hypothermia works, or it does not mean it does not work. Rather, it needs to be interpreted. And the interpretation should be, what's the probability of falsely rejecting the null hypothesis and making a type 1 error based on that p-value, right? The probability.
So that's where the fragility index comes in. The fragility index is linked mathematically to the p-value and is another way of representing the data. In this study, the fragility index was 1.
1. Do you know what that means? If one patient switched teams, they would have published a p-value that was over 0.05, right? One patient, either team.
Yeah, and this is based on a subjective outcome measure, which is susceptible to bias due to lack of blinding and reliability of the CPC score.
Yeah, so let's talk about lack of blinding. This was a huge limitation, I think, in the study. While the unconscious patients and the outcome assessors were blinded to group allocation, the clinicians were not blinded. And this introduces bias because they probably knew that the hypothesis was hypothermia good, right? Non-hypothermia bad. And that could have changed the management of those patients. Now, I'm not saying it was done on a conscious level. It could have been done on an unconscious level and treated those patients differently. These potential subtle differences in the management could be responsible for the fragility statistic difference demonstrated. Again, one patient, that's all it took.
Another issue is the temperature management itself. The true duration of temperature control seems at first like both groups were exposed to temperature management for the same amount of time, 48 hours. However, the temperature management was performed between 8 and 16 hours longer in the 33 degrees Celsius group due to additional time required for rewarming. In addition, a number of patients had their body temperature rise above 38 degrees Celsius, in particular after the period of TTM. This could have impacted the results and suggest that the target should have been 36 degrees Celsius for the usual care to prevent hyperthermia.
And the fifth and final point we wanted to talk about was outcome assessment. And this builds on nerdy point number 3. The outcome was done by one single psychologist. And they were blinded to group allocation, but the patient wasn't. And they were being questioned on their neurologic function. And they would have known if they were in the intervention group or if they were in the usual care or the control group. And the CPC is a subjective assessment. It's not objective. And these assessments were done by telephone. So you have a single person calling up an unblinded patient, asking them about a subjective outcome. So think about how those biases may have impacted the outcome assessment.
Yeah, and in addition, the inter-rater reliability of the CPC score in post-arrest cases is known to be poor. One study from Resuscitation in 2016 demonstrated disagreement between assessors more than 1 in 5 times, or 22%, giving a kappa of only 0.66. If another psychologist conducted the assessments, it's very likely that they would not have assigned the same CPC score for the survivors. This nerdy point comes from our foam friend, Dr. Josh Farkas from Palm Crit.
Do you guys know Josh Farkas from Palm Crit? Yeah, he does some excellent work, so we thank him for that contribution. Well, now it's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We would say that limited data suggests that the patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest or in-hospital cardiac arrest with a non-shockable rhythm had a statistically higher chance of good neurologic outcome with targeted temperature management.
You got to give residents a bottom line. Come on, tell me what I need to know.
The SGEM bottom line is we don't have good evidence to routinely recommend targeted temperature management in patients with non-shockable cardiac arrest.
All right, and can you resolve the case that you presented? What are you going to do?
Well, you initiate your ICE protocol based on your current guidelines, not influenced by the patient's initial rhythm.
I was a little concerned about Laura's use of the word ICE, because I understand that's the protocol here. You know, you ice the patient. From my perspective, I thought that meant you killed them. But she said, well, from her perspective, ice meant, you know, diamonds. Okay, and so if you're icing a patient, you're giving diamonds to them. I thought maybe I'm dark or something like that. But I thought, ooh, we're going to put that person on ice. But what they're talking about is obviously the TTM protocol. How about you going to take this paper on non-shockable cardiac arrests, and how are you going to take that with considering the breadth of the literature and apply it clinically?
These results are too fragile to change your practice. However, most institutions are applying their ICE protocols to all out-of-hospital cardiac arrest or in-hospital cardiac arrest patients that achieve ROSC and meet inclusion-exclusion criteria without regard to initial rhythm. The major takeaway from this is that 37 degrees may be a poor choice of target, as it seems to allow for fever to develop more often. Otherwise, we cannot say if TTM to 33 degrees Celsius or 36 degrees Celsius will improve outcomes for patient likelihood of survival with good neurologic outcome at 90 days.
One of the nice things I like to do with the SGEM is at the end of, you know, going through all this nerdy stuff, breaking it down, doing a journal club, is give you some information, give you a narrative on how you can say this information and distill it at the patient's bedside. What do you say to the family who came to you and says, so you're gonna put her on ice, right? I heard that's really good.
Well, what I would say is, and I think what you should do, is you tell the patient's family that their loved one has experienced a cardiac arrest, but that her heart is now beating on its own. You explain that she has been put into a targeted temperature control protocol and that her prognosis is grave. Right now, there's no clear data to help us know if her initial rhythm will have any influence on how she will do, but the fact she got bystander CPR could be very helpful.
All That sound means that it's time to announce the Keener Contest winner. And this sound means that there was no winner last week. The answer we were looking for is that the Butterfly IQ is thought to be available in Canada sometime in early 2020. What's the question this week?
The Celsius scale was invented by Swedish astronomer Anders Celsius, who lived from 1701 to 1744. It has 100 degrees between the freezing point of 0 degrees Celsius and the boiling point of 100 degrees Celsius of pure water at sea level air pressure. What year was the term Celsius adopted by an international conference on weights and measures?
If you know the answer, send an email to thesgem at gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thanks, Laura, for giving me the opportunity to come and speak at New York ASAP.
And thanks for the opportunity to be nerdy with you, Ken.
What I'm going to do is get some audience participation, because at the end, we read the tagline. So in your best, thickest New York accent, okay, can you do this on the count of three? One, two, three.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it.
Talk to everyone next week. Woo!